the Grey Hat Beard podcast.
Hello and welcome to show 35 of Grey Hat Beard, the modern workplace podcast, where we talk about all things Microsoft 365. I'm the Grey of Grey Hat Beard. My name's Kevin McDonald. I'm a solutions architect at CPS.
I'm Al Erdley. I'm the Hat of Grey Hat Beard, and I'm a technical architect at the MTC, Microsoft MTC.
Just to clarify. My name's Gary Trinder. I am the Beard of Grey Hat Beard. I am a solutions architect at CPS, a Microsoft Office Development MVP, and member of the M365 Patterns and Practices team.
You see, now Al is no longer an MVP. I'm still not an MVP. Gary's one just gets longer and longer and
it
longer.
Does.
We're just going to let him do the intro soon, I think. This week, again, we're in two parts. So this part will be talking about the news. And we're actually going to do a special just talking about Microsoft Build, which was last week. So we're going to cover a lot of the news that came out there. We'll try and take a Microsoft 365 slant every now and then, deviating just a little bit on the interesting things, which may be relevant as well. And then in part two, we're going to be joined by Simon Doy and some others to be determined. To talk about the I've got to get this right, the maturity model for Microsoft 365 on there. So this is all about how you can track and look at your maturity for your use of Microsoft 365 in the organization. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that. I will be honest, I've sort of dug into it very slightly, but looking forward to hearing what's been happening with it and what they're doing with there. I know there's a lot of them will work nicely together on that one. But for part one, we're going to be talking all about Build. And so we'll kick off with a little bit of the developer news because, and we're not going to go into this conversation, which everyone is having. No disrespect to everyone else talking about this, but obviously Build is traditionally the developer conference versus Ignite, which was traditionally the IT Pro and MBAS, which was the business apps side of things, and Inspire as a partner one. But we're seeing a blending. I think we talked about this before, a blending between those. So while there was dev news here, it certainly didn't feel like the dominant one. If you haven't seen it, if you want a nice wrap up of the dev news, the dev keynote with Scott Hanselman is absolutely fantastic. And if you're not a developer, still watch it because it is the art of how to tell a story with something that's a little bit different. They're not standing up on stage. I don't know.
They are at one point.
Technically they are.
they're in a theatre, not necessarily on a stage.
Well, in a theatre, in a car, at home.
Yeah,
it's a story, isn't it?
It is, and they sort of jump back and forth. And I felt a little bit for Scott Hanselman when he was talking about the full architecture and doing Hello World, and they decided to naff off and talk about something else. But yeah, plenty of humour to it while still kind of covering the important topics. And I kind of felt myself going through it going, that's new, isn't it? That's really good, because it was so entertaining. You kind of forgot that there was news being sneaked into it as well.
It was nice to see, after all of these conferences that have been online, there is still the opportunity to come up with a completely new way to actually present information, which did keep it compelling, even as not a proper dev. But I did hear lots about it and had to watch it just to find out what it was all about.
Yeah, I shared it internally at CPS for others because, as I say, even if you didn't like the news, to be inspired by what it is in terms of doing your own videos, I thought was really good. A few bits of the dev news. There was one I noticed that I tweeted this out. That apparently .NET 5 is 10 times faster than Node.js because it's all just about that straight line speed, obviously, that comes through there. But I find it interesting because it sort of shows that .NET isn't dead. It's still going on there. We also got .NET 6 previews been announced, which is the merger of the .NET framework and .NET core. And everyone's going zzz and dropping off at this point because it's not key in there. But I think it's great to see that performance, that pure speed of the underlying thing, which powers a lot of connections in the Microsoft space, is still getting faster. I was actually listening to .NET Rocks, another podcast, and they had Scott Hunter, who's not head of Azure, but I think the developer experience at Microsoft, he looks after a lot of that world, and how the entity framework core, which is the bit that connects to databases and data, is 70% faster. Things are faster. And bad news. And so you don't need to use Node anymore, Gary. We can go back.
Oh, well, that's all right then. Yeah, yeah. No, it is interesting. It's good to see that, you know, there's and everything can be improved, right? And, you know, for Node.js came along, it was really lightweight. You could use JavaScript that you're writing in the browser and write on the server. And it was, you know, kind of a mind-blowing kind of point where you could just, you know, you didn't have to change language to back-end development anymore. And kind of .NET is kind of having that as well. It's but the other way around, almost. You know, with Blazor coming and, you know, the whole kind of generation of WebAssembly through writing C Sharp and all those kind of things. But I think the stuff that is right to point out is that, yeah, just because it's not talked about doesn't mean that it's just completely, you know, dead in the water, so to speak. And actually, it's interesting you say about, oh, don't use Node.js. I've recently been using .NET Core and Entity Framework recently to build a web API on top of SQL Server. It is the most effective way to do it as well. And
you'll
get
benefits as well, Gary.
It kind of, but it's, you know, it's pick what's right, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. As always, it depends. But, you know, it is good that they're doing it.
Is there still a debate between front-end in quotes and back-end in quotes in terms of who's using what?
Most likely, yes, I think so, yeah.
I mean, because that always used to be the difference.
Mix and match. So you can have a Node backend with a .NET frontend. You could have a Node frontend with a .NET backend, and or JavaScript frontend, and you're not locked into this, especially with Azure AD and the kind of identity. Mm-hmm. You know, as we had Christos on a few weeks talking about, and we'll cover a couple of bits with that. It's you've got choices, as you say. Yeah. It's the bit about and unfortunately it does mean you have choices as well, so you've got to think about these things. But,
and you've got to remember, though, you know, one of the core themes of this build was, again, bring your own tools, right? Whether that's .NET, whether that is Node, it doesn't really matter. You can still work with Azure, Microsoft products in general, and all the services and APIs. It's, you know, it's that, you know, platform language agnostic approach that you get in the cloud. So
which I think was nice. And talking about platform agnostic, there was another thing that caught my eye slightly called the Developer Velocity Lab. And we were talking about this before the show. Still not entirely sure what it is, as I think it was Al noticed that none of these links are clickable on here. But it talks about productivity for developers and community for developers and well-being, and seems to be Viva for devs, basically, and workplace analytics on there. And then we kind of, as Al noted, there wasn't actually anything on there apart from a couple of videos and things. Maybe it's more about the work lab, which was kind of the interesting sciencey side on there. So I think it's great. Thinking about developer productivity is key, and that's what you want, getting people thinking and moving there. But something else to keep an eye on.
I think that is, yeah, as you say, there are words in there that resonate with Viva Insights in particular, and WorkLab, and the whole concept of actually using the science to drive well-being and productivity. And if you think about what Microsoft have done to generate the Viva Insights kind of data, you know, they've got all of the graph API, all of that graph noise that they can use. I guess they've now got the same thing from GitHub with Azure DevOps, and they've got data that they can actually start using and layering on that scientific investigation to actually work out what is good, what is bad, and to, you know, develop some patterns and trends. So it'll be interesting to see whether they come up with a developer trend index like they came up with a work trend index to see, you know, what it actually looks like in the developer world.
I mean, they must have the back-end metrics for so much of it to be able to do that. So
Well, when you think about it, you know, we've talked about this in the past with DevOps, and we've talked about, you know, the books that we've read, Phoenix Project, Unicorn Project as well. And there's a lot of themes in there that is based, yes, it's based on technology, but it's also based on how productive developers are. If developers aren't productive, that's going to have a knock-on effect to the rate at which you can develop new features, which has an impact on the business potentially. So looking at that productivity, that base level, for me makes total sense. How they're going to do it, you know, there's lots of metrics you could go with.
Commits, lines of code.
releases.
Yeah,
you know, the whole 10 releases a day kind of thing, you know, well, are you hitting one a month? There's a metric in its own right.
All those times where I do a release, screw it up, have to release another one and another one just after. I'm being productive. Yes.
Well, yeah, you've learned, right? You've learned something. You've released and got something wrong and you've released again. It's experimentation, right?
But it's the same with standard productivity. There are ways to measure it. It's taking a whole view and even looking at how things change over time, not necessarily the specific numbers. There is key with it. But
I do think this is definitely, you know, we've talked about DevOps and all that kind of stuff. But with Microsoft actually doing this, it opens this conversation up to a lot more of a wider audience, I think, a lot more, you know, corporates that use Microsoft as well.
I was about to say, well, you've got GitHub, that's kind of the big name, right? But I like what you're saying there. It's actually beyond the developer community by opening it up with Microsoft as a broader sense. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, definitely. And while we're talking about DevOps there, I know I sent this over to you, Gary. A lot of people call Azure DevOps as ADO, which always winds me because I think about the data object side of things. Yeah. So I'm going to start on that trend. Someone tweeted it, and I'm fully behind this. It's ASDO, A-Z-D-O, for Azure DevOps. So there we go. If you're talking about Azure DevOps, ASDO. There we go.
Completely agree. ADO, I always think of data connectivity in .NET. ADO.NET.
It just makes you sit there and think, like, why are they talking about data objects? I'm sure this is Node.
yeah, that's my head still 15 years ago. Yeah.
Well, your SQL Server 2014 hat.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yeah, for those listening, Al is wearing a fantastic SQL Server 2014 cutting edge technology on there.
Yeah.
Onto the talking of real cutting edge technology, Azure AD, there was a few nice announcements on there. One of them that was kind of continuation from our talk with Christos Matskus, was about three episodes back, about 3 or 4 weeks back on there. And he was to bring us the latest in identity management. And he talked about the continuous evaluation. So this was the ability within Azure AD to kind of go and constantly check to see if your token was valid effectively, so that you could expire an application as soon as you disabled someone, rather than potentially having longer periods of maybe certainly beyond hours and days and people still having access when they shouldn't, because that token was still valid. This would allow you to kind of make sure that people had their access removed a lot quicker. And what was interesting that came out from build is not only that that's there in Azure AD, but now available for Graph as well. So it's not the kind of almost a, I don't want to say the bottom layer, but the supporting layer of Azure AD, but it's the kind of functional areas bringing that out as well. So I think for those developers, really useful to give that quick access on there without too much performance impact and not having to have people continuously log in and re-authenticate. So nice but a little bit with that. And Al, you saw something around access reviews as well.
Yeah, so we've had access reviews for people to have access to different groups, different applications, SharePoint sites, and now access reviews are being introduced for service principals in Azure and to be able to have access to apps. So, you know, when you sign up for an app and you say, can it have permission to your data? Well, actually, you can put an access review around that and actually check and see whether that app still needs to retain permissions to actually access all of the content in Azure Active Directory. And I think that's really important. It's going to be a really crucial step, because I think so many organizations have probably had users who have had rights to actually grant permissions to the organization and have granted them, and maybe those apps aren't being used anymore, but they still have access to that data. So I think this is a really important step to actually make sure that all access is controlled. You know, we're not saying it can't be granted, we're just saying we're going to keep checking to make sure it is still required and then revoke it if it's not.
And I think we've also seen that evolution of that. Certainly we talked about SharePoint, that you don't have to grant access to all of SharePoint now. You can do it on a site basis for that. Now, as that's changed, it's a good opportunity to kind of revise that and look at it. So it's also challenging people to say, actually, is this still the right thing to do on there? Have we actually got more functionality to be more specific with these things now? It's really
It makes the whole governance story, again, much easier to have conversations with, you know, as consultants. I think there's, for me, I've experienced kind of a bit of fear with Azure AD apps and the permissions and having to talk through with administrators who are, and you know, not necessarily up on the authentication side to just, you know, kind of explain what this actually means when you're requesting a particular permission. What does that mean for me and my organization? And then, okay, you've done that. Okay, well, then what happens? You know, what happens when you disappear? You know, and you know, that again is the miss.
Rewrite to all sites when your app kind of just needs to access one list. I'd be slightly nervous about that. Exactly. It doesn't feel right.
But that's the thing, isn't it? You read it like that and you go, oh my god, this is everything, whereas actually, well, it kind of isn't, because if it's app permissions, then yes, okay, it is, but to everything. But if it's based on people, it's still based on their permissions, and you know, making sure that again people have the permissions to things that they should have.
And I think, you know, as with everything, we need to grant permissions at some point. But making sure that we take them away is probably more important than granting them in the first place. You know, that's a key risk that every organization has, that actually we don't take permissions away when we should do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So moving on from permissions onto something where we often talk about permissions, because you demo this stuff and everyone goes, oh, will that actually talk about the permissions? And that is Microsoft Search. So when you're searching, everyone wants to know permissions on there every single time. And so it's good to reassure people that, yes, they are.
Did someone mention Delve?
No, we'll come to that later.
and more. But there was a lot of announcements about Search that came out during Build, which was good. So some of these, I think they were regurgitating, that's the wrong word, reiterating things that have been around for a little while. I know I've been talking about Microsoft Search at various conferences, and the graph connectors, which are fantastic. So out the box, you can connect to Azure Data Lake, Storage Gen 2, but also things like MediaWiki, and now Salesforce, which I thought was really good to see that, you know, open up to more non-Microsoft with simple configuration. So no additional cost. That's not quite true. If you have an E5 and you have the right number of indexes, no additional cost, and you don't have to buy from a partner as you do with some, and it's a wizard connection to the Salesforce, and the same with ServiceNow, which was really useful to do on there. And I think most of those connectors were fairly standard, but and I'm trying to see if it's on this link. I mean, there's a lot of connectors you can get from partners, but they also mentioned, maybe it's further down, that Atlassian is going to be one of those kind of out-the-box connectors, as it were. So connecting to Jira and Confluence, which comes up an awful lot. And if you think about knowledge, you're going to have a lot of knowledge in your wikis, your Confluence wiki, so to be able to surface that in a single search, I thought was really useful. And knowing that Viva Topics also makes a lot of use of search kind of suggests that fairly soon we'll also be able to pull that Confluence content into Viva Topics as well, which I thought was pretty good. Go on now.
I was going to say, I think, you know, this is just, as you say, it's building on what's been released before, but just the concept of, well, actually, you know, we're going back to having those connectors that we used to have in SharePoint to be able to index external content. But this is just doing it to a lot more systems and a lot more in terms of what we can do with them, that data, once it comes in. As you say, topics, if we can bring all of these things into topics and actually use that information centrally, then that's very, very powerful prospect.
Yeah. And one of the other things I enjoyed seeing from here is you used to be able to have those custom connectors. They'd appear as verticals. I hope that's easy to see on the screen up the top, like the Contoso Wiki. But now that's it's not quite embedded in the search results. So it does appear different, but it will have its own box within there. So you'll see it under the all as well.
I love these updates when I look at it and go, we had that in SharePoint 2013. Yay! But it's still a good move, definitely. Yeah, I think the main thing for me that I really liked about the search announcements was about the profiles. That was profile definitely, yeah, which is coming next on the video. But yeah, the ability to surface data that is not in your Active Directory alongside people profiles in Microsoft 365, I think that's something that I think a lot of people will be asking for. And again, maybe this is Viva related as well.
I think this has been a long time coming. We've been asking for this for a very long time. You know, profiles in SharePoint, as you say, 2013 and prior to that, it was a very powerful capability to be able to add that custom data in and then to use that to tailor, you know, to map it against searching and actually come back with custom results, you know, bringing this information in from HR systems. I think they talk about SAP and Workday, Oracle, you know, bringing all of that information in.
You can make it into your profile with custom development on there. I think the point now is that you can do it as part of a kind of standard connector rather than through custom dev per se, and also categorize where it appears as well.
I think it's where it appears, because that was always the challenge, was the ability to actually change the profile as it was being presented. You know, you could do some of this stuff with, you know, with custom connectors before, you're right, but you couldn't surface that information very easily, you know.
True.
And that's, I think that's the key thing, is surfacing this information, how we can then use it, you know, whether we can use it to, you know, do a custom search for people based on, you know, their profile information as opposed to their Active Directory information. I think that'll be the next step that we'll see.
I think my one worry about it is one of the nice things about having go through all through AD is that you had a kind of single golden source that things could get loaded to. You now may get things from all different parts on there. And I don't think it's a tech issue. I think it's a process one to think about.
Yeah, I there's so many clients that I've worked with over the years where Active Directory is used for one thing and an HR system is used for something different.
Yeah.
And it's crucial to keep those separated to a certain extent, because you have a lot more flexibility with an HR system in terms of what you want to store, whereas you have quite a limited selection in Active Directory, you know. And I think this is where, if it's coming in and it's being populated, I think that works well. It adds to what is available in Active Directory, and you don't want your security and infrastructure team getting involved in, well, do I need to change it in AD on-prem and then synchronize it up? And whereas if you can just push it in from an HR system, then it gives you a bit more flexibility.
Don't get me wrong, I think it's a brilliant thing, great idea. I think it's just making sure that people consider things properly, as you should with everything.
I think looking at this, there's a whole number of integrations that would have been built in the past that pull data from all different places to put it in a profile that I'm sure this would massively benefit to get rid of those.
The question here is, if I need to go and update my address or my mobile number as the one on the screen, where do I go to update it?
But this is where things like
some complications come from.
This is where things like MIM, you know, Microsoft Identity Manager and Forefront Identity Manager, you know, that identity management tool, that's where you kind of, you measure where the master data is, you flag it and you say, actually, it comes in from this source, but it goes out to these three sources and gets propagated. You'd still need that kind of process in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I can't remember if it was on this. Oh, there's the new connectors with Jira and Confluence, and they're changing where they're putting the connectors. I mean, there's so much in this we're not going to go through, but one of the ones, I think the eDiscovery support, Gary, was something you pulled out of being particularly interesting for this.
Yeah, I think, like you say, e-discovery is a big part of compliance, right? So being able to go through and more easily search that content is obviously gonna help.
I think it's even different from more easily. It's, well, actually, if you can bring it all into that same search experience from third-party systems, I mean, that's a massive, massive jump forward. Because otherwise, we've always had that conversation, which can be quite difficult, to say you need to get all your content into the same platform in order for this tool to work effectively. As soon as you can say, well, actually, we can put a connector in and go to your legacy document management system, removing the need to maybe upgrade it or to retire it, and you still have that same e-discovery capability.
Oh no, don't do that. But yeah, at least it again gives you options.
Yeah.
Don't keep that cranking old thing that's out of support going for any longer. But yes. I stopped sharing, but I was thinking it was on another link, but I think the other link around search was the Microsoft Search Federation, which, I'll be honest, it took me a few goes to read through this and really work out what it was, because to me, Microsoft Search almost is the federated one, but then it seemed to be federating the content into something else as well. But to put it simply, it's going to allow you to pull even more things like Dynamics. And to me, Dynamics was the big one, to get the Dynamics data. And I'm always slightly surprised it hasn't been talked about more within Microsoft Search. And one of those, I know you could bring the partner connectors and you could bring the custom dev to integrate that Dynamics search into there. But this seems to be a step on there. And also the ability to pull all of them kind of independent from SharePoint almost. So you could have a federated search that isn't Microsoft Search focused as well, that I know they've talked about in the past. So I think the two bits are there were quite interesting and worth a more detailed read as well.
Yeah, when I read this was like Dynamics definitely stuck out, but a lot of it was Azure Search as well. And bringing us Azure Search capabilities into Microsoft Search, and yeah, the whole federated search, like double federation, it's kind of like, how many layers of this search system are we going to have? But yeah,
I can't remember if it was in this or elsewhere, but the ability for Azure cognitive search to also be able to crawl SharePoint as well, so you could have your search independent from that, I thought was, yeah, look, again, more options, which is good.
I guess this is why, you know, it is now Microsoft Search and not SharePoint Search. It is so that we can bring together these multiple disparate data sources. I mean, I remember using Fast Search to try and pull this data in, and that was an experience that I'd rather not repeat. Yeah, well, before that, I think.
Actually, it was before,
But I mean, I think that's, you know, this is the thing, isn't it? Search is such a powerful tool, and every organization is looking for that utopian dream of, I can search anything in my organization that I have permissions to see. But technically, it's quite a challenge to actually make that happen. And these are all steps towards making that a reality.
And I think what I love about Microsoft Search is also, it's that AI power. It's not where you're actively searching all the time. It kind of knows what you want almost before you do at times. So you click on that search box before you start typing. It's got results there. And there are many times when that's been exactly what I have been after. And maybe I'm just predictable and repeatable, but you know, many of us are. And if that helps us be more productive, as we said earlier, then all the better. The other bit that wasn't on here, and I think I've just got the next one that I saw slightly outside of build, but I thought was really interesting, was around the Microsoft Search ability to find a meeting recording based on what was said. Now, I'd probably say it's not the meeting recording, it's the transcript. So you have to have turned on transcript for your meeting recording. And I think if I remember rightly, they're turning on meeting recording by default. There was some talk about that within Teams as well. You're both looking blankly, which either means I'm wrong or
it does ring a bell, because obviously the storage changed, right, from stream service into OneDrive and SharePoint.
Yeah. So I think they're encouraging more things to be recorded unless you say by default. I'm sure there's a enterprise setting you can change that, but it also means those transcriptions. So it means where you think, when did I have that discussion in that meeting? To be able to go and search that, assuming it's managed, assuming you haven't got any people with northern accents on there that you can't understand. I know Gary, you and one of our colleagues has some trouble with some of the transcriptions. And I'm only quoting from what you have both said on there, not that there's anything wrong with your gorgeous northern lilt. But I think that ability to go, I'm going to stop now just before I upset everyone.
Yeah, this is
a shovel down, or is it a spade?
I say I am only referring to what other people have complained about the transcriptions more than anything else. I know one of our colleagues was listening into a town hall by turning on transcriptions because he was in another meeting, and he just started sending me screenshots because he found it absolutely hysterical, especially that he couldn't understand Viva. He thought we were talking about Beaver, and the conversation was very interesting at that point.
I'm moving swiftly on.
So when we've had these conversations, we'll be able to go and search for those dodgy things. Maybe useful for HR as well. But I liked that update that had come around search from there as well. Moving on very quickly we'll talk about Teams in a minute. But just before Teams, there was the Azure Communication Services, which I think it was announced not the last Ignite, but the one before, if I remember rightly, on there. And it's fair to say, and probably people would shoot me at Microsoft for saying this, but it's the ability to host your own Teams effectively, to have all your communication elements, to have your calling on there, but via APIs, so you can run it as a service, build it into your apps, whether they're mobile apps or web apps. You can bring those different bits into there. And Al, you said there were some nice updates that you noticed from this.
There was a lot in this that really sort of adds to the levels of complexity that we could put into a custom built app using communication services. And I think the importance around this is there's a UI there coming through. So, you know, you can build the UI more easily, but it does some things like call recording. You know, which is a really
especially northern accent.
We're not going to go back into that conversation, but things like call recording are really important for regulated industries. You know, to be able to control that call recording is really, really important. And so rather than just relying on Teams to be able to do everything, you can extend what it can do with these sorts of tools. So ACS allows us to actually do some of that call recording, but it's also got things like direct routing. So, you know, everything can come into Teams and then come out to a custom application. You've got an SDK for calling going into the universal Windows platform. So, you know, you can build applications that allow you to integrate your custom solutions and just call and set up those calls directly. So it starts to give us a lot of capabilities to really extend out those calling scenarios from what you get as a default with the Teams telephony. So I think that's where it really is going to stand out. You know, I know we were talking earlier about this, and it was, you know, healthcare, you know, consultations, you know, those sorts of scenarios where you can build a custom app that's going to be integrating with Teams calling, be able to record a consultation. You know, I think that's really, really valuable capabilities that I think will be a game changer in a lot of industries.
And it was interesting because I think we've talked before about the idea of, I was around Christmas, of using Teams a lot to talk to family and things like that. Tom Morgan had a great post, which I'll dig out and put in the show notes, where he basically built a Teams Lite application for family. And then they could just install the app and made it a lot simpler and easier on there, and was a lot cheaper than paying for a Teams license effectively. Now, he had a Teams license, so it's probably more POC than anything else, but it was a nice idea, and certainly went through the process and how easy it was to get set up as well.
I think the Azure Communication Services is something that, you know, obviously it's been announced. It's kind of been under the radar a bit for me. I think in a lot of terms, Jeff Tepper's keynote as well, he talked about, Teams development, Microsoft 365 development, and ACS was actually mentioned in there in the graphic that he's got, but he actually skipped over it. which was really interesting, I thought, because in the other demos, AECS is kind of the kind of introduction to the new things that are coming in Teams. So when I look at ACS, I then see, from a developer standpoint, things opening up, like being able to access real-time audio and video as well. It's not this just, like you made the perfect example, you know, Tom Morgan using it as a standalone, but actually it's how you can you use ACS to work with Teams. The demo that was mentioned was really interesting about, you know, you've got a customer that's working with someone inside an organization who is using Teams for their calling and, you know, collaboration, and how they can interact with someone who's not part of the organization, you know, go through a booking of, we're going to book a call and you're going to be able to take this call on your phone just through the website, not have to download a Teams client or anything like that. And try and have that seamless experience from the user perspective, but also from the organization's perspective, because it'll give a better experience all around. I think that demo really captures a lot of the features that we'll probably talk about in a moment that are coming as well in Teams. But I think ACS really does open that up now to be you know, something that I think has been looked at Teams going, well, this is what we need, and now it's coming.
I mean, those customer service scenarios, you know, oh, well, I've got, you know, the app on my phone, my banking app, and I need to call somebody. Oh, and they can actually just step through and I can have a conversation. I can see somebody. They can show a screen. They can share something. I think those are the sorts of scenarios where it's just extending out. I think we talked about Dynamics Field Service having the chat built into it. And we talked at that point, well, what else can we do? And that's, I think this is really that coming to reality as well. Actually, we have all of this ACS stuff that we can actually use to extend the integration with calls and chats and screen shares and all of that good stuff.
I think we should move on, because I'm thinking of side projects and stuff to do off the back of that.
Yeah, I can see you pondering and thinking.
No more side projects. But it does lead nicely into, as you were saying, Gary, there was a lot announced around the next generation of collaborative apps for hybrid work, aka stuff in Teams.
This is pretty packed, I must admit. This one blog post that, you know, we've got up and we'll have the link in the show notes, is just has tons of things that is coming for Teams development. Here's the image that I mentioned in Jeff's keynote, where it's got ACS in there. You know, there's a whole stack there now of different ways to build collaborative apps, I think.
And that lovely bit at the bottom, that pro dev to low code, no code. And, you know, I'd argue here there should be a bit of a blurry line. That's at the GitHub with Power Apps and things and others. It's all connecting neatly together.
I think this is the thing, isn't it? When you look at this illustration of how it's all coming together, there's so much in there. I mean, it's such a powerful platform to use. Every device OS, pretty much. I can't think of any that aren't in there. But you've got so much capability to extend. You know, it just says, is your PaaS. That doesn't even scratch the surface of, you know, well, what is that? Well, there's quite a lot in there. But as you say, Gary,
Gary and I are a little bit disappointed Acorn Electron's not up on that.
Is it not? Oh, okay. Right.
Now you've got me thinking if we can build a CLI for Acorn Electron.
In basic.
Oh, wow. Sorry,
Oh, tangent there. Yeah. Well, there's another side project for you both. I'll see you in about 3 months' time when you've done that. But yeah, sorry. I mean, I think that's the thing, isn't it? These images where you see everything that's there, there's so much there. It's so powerful a platform now. Think about a year ago, 18 months ago, you'd never have considered that all of these things would all be in one diagram describing one set of, you know, building blocks that we can use together.
Yeah, I agree. And washing tablets. Oh, no, sorry, that's data first. I think it's great, and the kind of capabilities with these building into their new event meeting APIs. I know we were talking about in the happy hour etiquette about maybe having the ability with an API to pick up when people like and have the kind of clapping icon during a meeting and things like that would be really nice. And maybe we're closer. I don't think they included this one. I haven't dug deeply into that, but it didn't seem to be available yet. But more and more, and my favorite one, the together mode extensibility. So you can now build, and this the preview of the portal is available now. You can build your together mode. So if anyone's seen together mode, if you're in Teams, click up the top, and at the moment, just having to check, make sure it hasn't come into things now, but at the moment, you have to have up to 5 people, and then you can change the custom background. Now you can actually add your own images. You can see from that picture there, you can drag where the different people, so person one appear here, person two, and finally soon when it lands, I'm going to be able to have my dream of having Muppets and having everyone's faces in a meeting, like the intro to Muppets with all the bits there. So you've already got
Muppets. We're here for you.
It's making it real and filling that in there. Looking forward to it. And I have to say, I have played around with this portal preview. It's very easy to get going on there. Haven't got the latest update for Teams, so haven't been able to actually publish and use it yet, sadly. I've seen a few people have. I've seen a lot of Star Trek bridges coming out and being shown on there. So I think it's nice. And the other bits in the portal, we were talking, Gary, you mentioned about the Azure AD and having to get admins to go and deploy stuff on there. They've actually made that easier from here. So doing your app registrations, you can do from within here as well. And I thought that was quite a nice simplification to things for people as well.
Yeah, the new Teams developer portal, which is replacing the App Studio. We've previously used to create apps in Teams. I think there was a few other enhancements with that as well, like the ability to share your apps that you're building with other people as well, which is previously we wouldn't be able to do in the App Studio. It was very much like I would upload an app and I would be able to see it and edit that and then publish it, but I couldn't share that with anyone else unless I actually shared that app, you know, for people to use. Whereas now it's like it's more of a pre-publishing area almost. It's like, here's the app definition and I'm going to give access to other developers to go in there and update that. I think it's interesting. So we've just gone through this kind of screen and there's all sorts of different updates here. There's API specific updates, and then there's we've got a new together mode extensibility, which is very much kind of, you know, clicking around in a UI. And you know, I think the whole realm of updates here is across the board very much.
But I think it's just showing again that Teams is that platform, that capability. You know, you can see here having those meeting apps, which have been around for a little bit, but just adding extra functionality to inject those and make those easy to use. That interoperability with the Azure Communication Services, as you said. Now this is why I'm going to pull my ignorance on this one. I'm hoping Gary might step in, but the fluid components from Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
Felt like it's the pulling together, because there's been so many disparate UI frameworks when it's come to Teams and other things. This seemed to me to be a good step, but I haven't dug in to see what the experts think.
So fluid framework is, for me, it's like when you look at it, you go, wow, real-time updates. And the biggest problem for me has always been, okay, when would I use this?
And I'm again confusing fluid and fluent at that point.
So fluid is the real time kind of like dashboard approach. So we had this big dashboard that everyone could be, you know, creating tasks and writing on bits of the screen all in real time. And the actual data in there is real time as well. So you could share that with other people as well. And if it was in a Word document and it got updated, the document would just update. And there was always this kind of confusion. Well, sometimes you might not want that to update. You might want it to be static. And there's this kind of, well, where would we use it? Now we're seeing it come into Teams as kind of like a way of doing a real-time conversation within a Teams channel.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, okay, I'm looking at it and I can build a task list out with everyone else who's in the team. But then I don't know if I'd actually use that as opposed to, you know, how I'd create a task list now. I think it's one of those things that it looks great but actually, is it adding too much confusion? I think probably it is, but you know, it's great to see it.
You know that there will be use cases where this will be absolutely perfect for some teams, and
yes.
The one we're looking to use for the happy hour etiquette, I know, Al, thank you very much for hosting that last week, but the pain of trying to use the slides and the timer just didn't work. And then trying to have the app of doing the scoring as well. What we're thinking about having is a more social scoring. So anyone who is there can sort of vote on the points and have kind of live updates and seeing things on there. I started using SignalR, which is working, but I'm toying since seeing this of changing it to using the fluid components so that everyone can see the same question that's being shared and talked about. They can see who the current speaker is and they can click and vote for that person as it goes along as well.
So the only thing about this is, I think from reading it, it's only supported in a Teams channel. It's not supported anywhere else.
Yeah, buttocks, that throws that plan out the window. but you can have the fluid components in a standalone web app, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
So then it could be in a Teams meeting app.
Of course, it got open sourced last year. Yeah,
last Ignite, I think, wasn't it? So I do agree. I think there is going to be a fantastic use case where suddenly everyone's going to go, I get it. And writing on together on documents, I think, is one of them. Mm-hmm. Having them in Teams, let's hold and see. Someone will come up with something.
I mean, I think there will certainly be scenarios, but you know, we've had kind of similar stuff with, you know, Outlook supporting this for Yammer conversations, being able to reply and things, which has been a great use case for me. I've stopped looking at Yammer because I can just do it, ironically, all in email.
Yeah, there's, I think, you know, the few announcements from the Teams area that really caught my eye were the universal actions in adaptive cards, which is definitely one step to try and, let's say, fix the issues between all the adaptive cards, between Outlook and Teams. There isn't full parity across the board. There's lots of kind of issues when you're dealing with different platforms using the adaptive card. So universal actions is a way to provide that kind of more joined up approach. Obviously we've got message extensions now, which we've had in Teams coming into Outlook as well. I can see that actually being useful as well. You know, a scenario of I've got, you know, a line of business system that I just want to pull some information from and put that directly into a message. Yeah, I think that's going to be useful. The development story as well, I think, has taken a real step forward. So there's a new version of the Microsoft Teams toolkit for VS Code and Visual Studio. Lots of improvements and a lot of focus on developer workflow, developer productivity, as we talked about earlier, to really streamline that process, because what Teams development can be a bit painful. There's a lot of moving parts, and what they've done is they've really simplified that almost to like one click, and with a web server that spins up with hot reload as well. So again, just speeding that development process up. Azure Function integration as well in there, which in the toolkit, which is really good. So if you need to have a call out to an API and you've got a function within the toolkit. So if you build a Teams app project, you can have your Azure Function code within that project as well. So they're linking that up. And then the final bit, what they've done is they've not only simplified the developer workflow, they've also improved the authentication story as well. You can now, it's one line of code that you need now to basically set up authentication, say the Microsoft Graph in your Teams app. Again, really simplifying it, just allowing you to get on and call in the APIs that you need. So again, that is just a huge step forward, which was really good to see.
Be interesting to see. But those who aren't developers are going to go, what do I care about this? You hit that on the head, developer productivity. So if you're creating custom stuff for this, it's going to be easier for your devs. So they're going to get more done. Does it mean we're going to see more apps? Because if I think about the number of apps that I use in Teams on a regular basis, I could name them on one fingernail, I think, on there. They're just
just Viva Insights and tasks and calls and chats and meetings.
But any custom ones outside the ones I get from Microsoft, I've never felt compelled to want to install another one, particularly. I don't know why. You know, maybe I'm missing out on things, but I hope that a lot of this stuff that will be something that everyone goes, oh, if you've not got that installed, you really should. We look back to when kind of the bots came into Teams. I think Polly was the one that everyone talked about as the demo. I can't remember if I've ever used that since that first demo came out and things on there. So
it's like everything. It's like everything, though. You need to get value from whatever application you have. And, you know, Viva Insights, I get value from that. The virtual commute at the end. But if you had something else that had just the same, you know, the value that you get, then inevitably you'll use it. Obviously, it will come down to cost as well. But yeah. I think that's the thing. I think with all of these things, it's opening up the potential for that radical new app to be built that will significantly save you time. And that's the potential, isn't it? That all of these things, you know, are opening it up. You know, the Viva connection cards, you know, I think everybody's been waiting to see those. They're in what, private preview at the moment?
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
So probably because we didn't really, I know I had that on the screen for a little bit, but didn't talk about it. The Viva connection cards are part of Viva connections on the dashboard. If you've ever had seen a Windows phone where you kind of have the live updates from APIs.
Sorry, what?
We really are going back in time.
Yeah, sorry. We're back to 2014 again, aren't we? Yeah.
And Bill Ayers will be happy.
I was just about to say the fact that even Bill Ayers has moved off his Windows phone says that maybe it is time. But I know there are a few floating around. In fact, I've got one in a drawer just over here that I powered on and it still works just about.
I think you were saying about the apps. I think this is it's maybe something to talk to Simon Doy about when we talk about the maturity model, right? I think, you know, it's again, we've all been kind of getting used, a lot of organizations have been getting used to Teams, and you get used to how Teams works, how you work in channels, all those kind of things. And then you start to look at the apps. So the apps are there, but, you know, I don't think they're necessarily needed to be exposed, because I think people go, I need to embed something, I'm going to go to a tab. I wouldn't think I'm going to create an app that has tabs inside that to just group things together.
And I think the ones there, when people are using other services, they're kind of surfacing those other services, it's not easy to say, on there. But I haven't seen ones that people want to install almost on their own. So, you know, for example, we talked about Jira. If you're using Jira, I'm sure there's some good Jira apps out there for getting to see your cards and things there. But seeing something almost on its own, I feel like we've talked before about the idea of having a timer app within a meeting to help keep to the right time, he says, looking at the timer, for example. But yeah, be interesting to see there. Maybe moving on, talking about time. Because one of the other ways that those apps happen in there, I think for those who aren't pro devs, so much of this can be done with the low code side of things. And there was a lot around Power Platforms and a lot of AI type stuff around Power Platform, including reducing your process bottlenecks with Process Advisor for Power Automate, now generally available. I've read this twice and I can't work out if I'm missing something here, but it basically seemed to be saying it would just advise you on how to improve your processes, but I couldn't quite work out how it worked out what your processes were. Is it automatically analyzing what you do and saying, here, do this instead? Is that what it is actually doing, or am I just
I think that's where experimenting with it is the best thing. I mean, from what I read about this, the term that jumped out to me was process mining capability, which implies to me that, you know, it's going to actually discover processes that you're carrying out, whether there's repetitive actions that you could then automate.
I mean, it gives an example there, like invoice submission process. So is it looking where you've got a lot of invoices in? And
so I'm thinking this is more RPA based than anything else. It's almost like looking at what you do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Is it then looking at the graph and looking at across? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I need to test this out and see, but I don't know, what kind of volume of history you need to be able to identify, well, actually, this is what you're doing on a regular basis, because theoretically that should be accessible. Oh, well, we can see that you carry out these activities, but how it then maps it across and makes a recommendation. I
think you should buy a faster kettle. You spend too long making cup of tea. If you bought sweets in bulk, you wouldn't have to go so far. I'm just worried what it's going to analyze for me.
Why is it that Clippy always enters my mind when we talk about things like this? It appears you want to submit an invoice. Do you want me to help?
So I love the idea of it. I'm kind of cynical about how it can actually pull those things out, but quite excited as well. Just look at how long you spend doing daily updates to your organization about what you do, and if it could find automated ways of improving that, I am all for that.
Oh dear, I've just noticed the highlighting repetitive tasks like copy and paste from one app to another. So that's every developer who has ever written code is now worrying that they're getting tracked.
But it's not copy from Google to it's code, is it?
No, it's Stack Overflow.
Oh, okay. Fine. That's safe then. You'll have to try it and let us know next week exactly what it finds out that you need help with.
Yeah, I might turn it on. I might jump ahead slightly there, talking about the idea of removing your copy and paste. There was also the Power Apps ideas. And I'm just fascinated by this. This is brilliant. From what I can tell, you can basically type in natural language what you want it to do, and it will convert that into a formula. So instead of having to work out the syntax that you've got for your Power Apps, so say you wanted to filter a certain amount of content, it would work out for you, as far as I can tell. Yeah. You see the example showing here of show me the customers from the US. It keeps moving just someday there. Show me the customers from the US whose subscriptions expired, and it's turned that into a filter query.
show 10 orders that have stroller in the product name and sort by purchase date with newest on the top. I think it'll be very interesting to see A, how effective this is, and B, whether it actually takes off as a way for people to actually really start to build it. For no code developers, it could be revolutionary. I mean, it could completely transform how far they can go before they have to start digging into the syntax of particular formulas and stringing them all together. And I think that will enable a lot of people. But I think it was you, Kev, who said, this is a bit like the Power BI, natural language query for data, which kind of works a little bit. You need to put a lot of effort into getting it correct in the first place.
Yeah.
So that natural language parsing really works. It'll be interesting to see how much this needs of metadata around the information that you're using, so that it can start to actually generate accurate code.
There's one. So maybe you need to name and label your buttons effectively to be done. If it gets people doing that more, there's an advantage in itself. But I think this is interesting, and certainly as someone, I think Gary, you're similar, does a lot of different languages. It goes from sort of Power Apps to PowerShell to C# to to JavaScript and TypeScript. And I do often struggle with the PowerFX notation in time. So I find it's very different to a lot of the other ones. And I do have to look up very often similar things from there. So and filtering is one of the ones I have to do most. So if it makes that easier, I am all for it. I like that idea.
Yeah. I think it's just nice that we've got to this stage when I see stuff like this. It's not, I don't look at it and go, ooh, I'd love to use that. It's more like, okay, that's cool. But the fact that how all the different technologies that are allowing you to actually do that is a bit mind boggling. When you think about it.
See the GPT-3, all about natural language input. Mm. it just sounds fascinating. So I think it's, there was a whole extra section about the GPT-3, which you can build into your Azure apps and pieces there that was interesting. So it was, I love the way they kind of announced that. And they said, oh, by the way, we're using it in Power Platform as well. I thought it was quite a nice little example of using it, which was cool. Coming back to those talking about Power Apps developers, if you want to build and test Power Apps, then you can get it for free, which you haven't been able to do before. Or actually, I think you have, when we were talking about this at the beginning, wasn't it? That's not quite here. I guess the Dataverse stuff is, might be slightly different, but it feels very, was it the community version of Power Plan, wasn't it? I think it was called Community Plan, that's right. So it seems to be a kind of rebranded and a bit more to it than that. But so nice, don't get wrong, but very happy with it. Wouldn't say it's necessarily new. Good to see.
Yeah, I guess the only thing, I know we've had the Community Plan before. I guess it's the, I'm trying to remember if that included Premium or not, which this does. So I don't know if that's the one of the big changes, but I know that there has been, you know, a in quote developer kind of area that you could create. It just wasn't called developer environment.
Well, I think anything that makes it easier to practice, to learn, to develop your skills, that's great. Anything that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. And I love that pick your tool, whether it's Power App, Power Automate, Dataverse, as you'd expect, but also Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, and Azure Services all in one. So, like that. And there was a talk about Fusion development. I'm trying to remember what that was now. Was it Gary? Did you put this one up there?
Yeah, so I think this is a lot of the, we've talked about the, you know, the image that showed earlier of the, this is the fuzzy line, right, of the pro dev and the low code, is, you know, like what we all want to do, we want to get to building stuff in the most effective way, and that might include using Azure services, the more developer focused services, to extend what you've got in the Power Platform. You know, use the Power Platform for what it is good at. You could build, you know, rapidly build user interfaces, hook that into systems that you've already got. That might be an on-premises SQL database. You're going to use the Azure services to hook into that. You know, I mentioned at the very beginning of this
idea, which you may have been thinking of recently.
Yeah, at the very beginning, I was talking about using .NET Core, you know, to create a web API that was on a SQL server. And what did I do? I went into Power Apps and I plugged into that API.
I think that's the thing. This is the logical sort of end game, isn't it? Of, well, actually, we can go low code to some code, to pro code, and integrate with, well, pretty much any service that we want to. And I think this is complemented. There was another article they had around Power Platform, best ways is the best way for teams to build together, where they're talking about fusion teams, you know, okay, my low code and my pro code team work together, and there's a bunch of different tools that they're talking about in there. Everything from CLI to Canvas apps, Visual Code, Visual Studio Code, that should probably be. And it's pulling everything into one team, one cross-functional team who can actually do everything.
Does that mean multiple people can work on a Power App at the same time now?
Yeah, I've not got down to that part yet to see whether a Canvas app... Yeah, you'd probably need to explode it in Visual Studio and you know, there's all sorts of things you'd need to do. But I think that's the thing, is that that's...
Right. Joking aside, I guess, yeah, if you're working on VS Code and it's there in GitHub, I guess you probably could. I was taking a piss there, but
I think
there is the possibility.
Yeah, the strategies for the Power App side. So the strategies of basically break up your app into mini apps, so then multiple people can work on them and then combine them together. There's that. But I think, you know, from what you're saying, Al, is that this is more about looking at what skills you need in a team to build an application that includes all of these different services. Don't just look at them as, you know, just Power Platform and just Azure. There is a balance in the middle, and that's where organizations are really going to benefit, because that's going to speed up a lot of features that need to be developed. And like you say, bringing people together is always good for me.
And I think, yeah, one of the scenarios that they talk about in that article is about getting a Canvas app exploded in code, but then allowing a pro dev to come in and start to resolve challenges around a complex function or a complex formula.
So what you're saying is about low-code devs breaking everything and the poor pro-code having to come fix it.
No, adding advanced capabilities to it that maybe the low-code dev doesn't understand.
No, I think it's a go. I'm taking the mic here, but I do think it's a good thing. Just, Gary, very quickly, for health and safety reasons, I should say, with the current pandemic, there are reasons why we shouldn't all be coming together.
That is true.
Exactly. Okay, virtually. Absolutely on that. Just picking up before we go on forever, I thought it was a lovely, and it was a fairly small announcement, but the Bot Framework Composer is absolutely fantastic tool that's kind of the nice bridge to developing bots on there, and that's now going to be available within Power Virtual Agents on there, so you can really have that. I think Power Virtual Agents has been nice, but the kind of extensibility and taking anything beyond the basics has been quite hard, and you've had to develop your bots kind of separately and then integrate those. This effectively gives you that extra bit of connecting up to those APIs, for example. Before, you'd have to do it through Flow and add various steps. Now you can build it in with the Power Virtual Agent. So I thought this was very nice. Although, Al, you did notice an exception for this.
There's one caveat in there that I could see, which was, if you're using Dataverse for Teams, you don't get this option. You need the full-fledged PVA, Power Virtual Agent.
I think just something to note of. I don't see that as a problem personally, but good to make sure you're aware of it, I think.
Yeah,
and I think that was pretty much our build in terms of that, which makes it sound like not much. Just looking at time, we have been nattering on for a while, sorry. Thank you all those who've made it this far. I think my one disappointment was, when I searched through the sessions a few weeks before, I only found one on Viva. And as it got closer, I don't think there were any more. I think Vesa had talked about the Viva connections that we were talking about there. The dashboard capability was great, but there was nothing more. There was no APIs. I thought, being built, and I know it's not just a developer conference anymore, but I thought we'd see APIs for topics, maybe even for workplace analytics and more details on how we can deploy apps within that. Nothing yet, which was a little sad. Hopefully it'll just whet our appetite and there will be more coming. I can't remember who I was talking to, but someone was saying that obviously one of the key things about Viva is that ability to bring in other apps and embed those, whether it's through the Viva connections, through the dashboards, the workplace analytics, and surfacing things like Lint there. Maybe it's more about partners. Maybe Inspire's coming up. We might see more there, but can't say I'm too hopeful at the moment. I might be looking for more end of summer before we see lots of good news coming out of that, but fingers crossed not that. I did see one non-build article related to that I liked. Mark Cashman did on his own personal blog, talking about the personal side of Viva, and really talked about how he's already using Viva within Microsoft. And it's I know how you see this every day, but the Microsoft portal for things, and how that's being used with Viva, and details on the Viva topics, so being able to search for things and understand what they mean on there, which I thought was very interesting and good to see people try and talk about the real side of what's come from Viva. So well worth a read on that one. If only we had someone who was recently a new joiner and had started at Microsoft who could talk about their experience at all.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the thing though, isn't it? A lot of that stuff is already, you know, quite well ways ahead within the Microsoft tenant. So it is being used, and it is great to see it, because it is really useful. It's really useful stuff. So yeah, can't wait for it to be released into the wild.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. And I know you were talking about the virtual commutes, which I think hits, I think, every tenant. I know Carolina Kitakari have been waiting for a while, but seems to have gone out to everyone now. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think it's the first stab at it. You know, there's still a lot to come. And certainly, you know, the sessions that I've been doing around Viva Insights, you know, the app has some stuff in there, but I think a lot of people are finding it actually really quite useful and quite surprising when they haven't actually seen what's in there. So, you know, I think that's the first step. You know, we know that there's going to be more stuff coming by, you know, the middle of summer, end of summer. So, you know, Headspace integration.
Yeah,
that's one that's been teasing us on all of those screenshots, hasn't it? So, you know, when that comes out along with the connections cards, I think that'll be where it really starts to come to life.
When it comes to Headspace integration, just relax, take a deep breath, wait for it to appear, live in
patience.
In the moment, not in the future with that one. Now, usually we talk about events coming up. I think, Al, you've got one as M365 Chicago, was it?
Yeah, Taste of M365 Chicago is this Friday. So I'm doing my session on Viva Insights, measuring well-being and productivity.
Just in case for people listening, this Friday is Friday, June the 4th.
Friday, June the 4th, yeah.
That one. So, and that's, what's that, Central Daylight Time? So probably more like...
Yes, it's 7 p.m. I'm doing my session.
7 on a Friday, bring out the beers. That's what we say.
Maybe after the session, not before.
On that one, I don't think there's any other events coming up in the near future. We sort of seem to have got near the end of the May Madness conference season. I know there's been a lot of great virtual ones, and everyone is just holding off for Comsverse coming up and South Coast Summit. Should say, if you are listening to this, I think by the time you get this, the call for speakers will be open for the South Coast Summit. So do jump on that if you're a speaker. If you're not a speaker but have thought about it, jump on it as well. I'm sure, I hope I'm not going to speak too much for Al and Gary, but if you reach out to us on Twitter or LinkedIn and got any questions and thinking about it, yeah, give us a shout. We'd love to see more speakers. It's always good. And Comsverse, if you have got to this point in the show and you're still listening, please, I think the votes, have they closed for the awards now? That's a good question.
That's a good one. We maybe should have checked that before we started talking about it, hey?
Yeah, I just stopped saying that. I think actually it may have closed now, sadly, but we have been nominated for Best Community Podcast. So we will be... I can't see it on the front page, so I think it may have closed there.
It's still open.
Oh, still open. So we'll put a link in the shameless link in the show notes. If you would like to go and vote for us as your favorite podcast, there are some other great podcasts there, but I'm not going to mention them. Just go straight to the Grey Hat Beard and click on Place My Vote. And then once you've done that, go back and have a look at some of the other ones. There's Best Community Blog and Best Community Contributors, a whole load there. So do go and have a look at those. Otherwise, we will be back next week with Simon Doy and hopefully some others we will see on there. We'll be talking about maturity, not my favourite topic. I'm never very good at being mature, but it's about Microsoft 365 in this case, so a little bit better. But thank you very much for this week. I hope you've enjoyed our roundup of Build and all the good news that have come from there. I've been Gray.
I've been Hat.
I've been Beard.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.